Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesch of Flesch and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesch and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesch and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesch.
Welcome to Legal Talk. Thank you so much for being with us. Our show is brought to you each week by the firm of Flesch and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. And Kevin and I, we do our show here on KLZ 560 as well as Sportsman of Colorado Radio. And we have joined up to bring a little bit of both of those shows here in one with Legal Talk. So, Kevin, how are you?
I'm great, Scott, but it has been a while.
Man, I miss doing the International Sportsman's Expo this year.
That's a bummer. I kind of cleaned up part of my garage last weekend.
I know. It made me do a lot of extra work.
This is what my life is. Instead of sitting at ISE and seeing all of our friends and hanging out with folks that listen to the show, I'm getting rid of bikes and sweeping up the garage. It was so depressing.
Absolutely.
But I would agree with you. And you know what I realized while I was in my garage last weekend doing the stuff alone is how much I miss just seeing all the people.
Oh, I know.
And just talking about getting things kind of figured out for the next year and trying to figure out schedules so we can go do stuff. And as much fun as we have on the radio, we have more fun when we get out
Absolutely.
And spend time with a lot of our sponsors and everything else. And so, I feel your pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Because it's just a tough. I also realized that the transition from the holidays, I'm always glad to see Christmas come, and I'm always glad to see it go. And it just seems like in our schedule the last few years, that it went because we started right after Christmas getting stuff ready for ISE and to move forward with that stuff and do, you know, and get, you know, I've been doing seminars on gun laws and things in the last few years as well. So we get that prepped and get good slides and doing all that stuff. Yeah. So we get put on a good presentation. And so it's next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
2022. It's going to happen.
We are in year 9 of Sportsman of Colorado Radio, and we want to thank all of our sponsors and supporters through the years that have made that possible for us. And last year we had a lot of hiccups with just things going on and cancel shows and banquets and all kinds of things.
Right.
But, you know, hopefully this year we can get things turned around. And by the way, you know, if you're a company out there and you like what we do here on Sportsman of Colorado and you'd like to be a part of it, let me know. And I'd love to come by and visit with you and see if it would be a good partnership for us both. Well, Kevin, recently you were on John Rush's show in the afternoon.
Yep.
And you guys were talking a lot about guns. And, you know, sometimes we get so in-depth about hunting and stuff. I want to talk about that a little bit today because statistics show there were about 7 million new gun owners in 2020. So not just gun owners, new gun owners. So I thought, man, there's got to be a lot we can talk about there.
Yeah, and a lot of new people in the use of guns. And so it's always good, and even folks that are aware of all of these things, the law does change on a regular basis, so it's always helpful to get a refresher on some things. So
yeah, absolutely.
Completely agree.
So, you know, starting out, if we just said, hey, bought a gun, so let's just present this to you. You know, if you happen to have bought a gun, of course, at a gun shop or a gun show, great, and you went through all the normal things. But if you happen to do maybe a secondary purchase through a friend or relative or someone you didn't know and you just traded cash for the gun, there could be some dangers there.
There really can be, especially in Colorado. You know, the law changed with any sort of transfer like that. You're supposed to go through an FFL and do a regular transfer now that's documented versus a hand-to-hand transfer like we used to be able to do prior to 2013. And you know, as we sit here in the studio today, I'm waiting on an application for a new shotgun that I wanted to buy on Monday, and they're saying it's taken four days to get it. But that's just the volume of people trying to buy guns, and I think to some degree, COVID and whether or not the individuals at CBI are fully staffed and that sort of thing. But there's a period of time that you have to wait to get that application mm-hmm. back. And the application's a little different now. It's a little bit...
They did change a couple of slots.
Yes. And so that's always interesting to see how the application has changed. And, you know, with the red flag law and some of the things, you just got to read. You got to read all of the affirmations that you make or where you say yes or no on some questions relating to mental health and other things to make sure that you're being completely honest in what's going on. And the reason that you have to do that is because that's the law. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love that it wouldn't be that, and I would like to see it repealed, and I would like to see it changed, but that's a show for another day.
Right.
But right now, whenever you do any sort of transfer, and that's, you know, the law says that you and I go out and hunt for an afternoon, and we swap guns midway through the afternoon, in a pheasant hunt or whatever, you're really supposed to be doing a transfer for that. So it's just something that you have to remind yourself about so that if you are questioned by law enforcement as to where a gun was or how it was, that you don't have to answer those questions. And you have to be really careful about that to make sure that you don't run into this problem with the transfer. But if you're actually selling a gun to somebody mm-hmm. or buying it through a dealer, you're going to have to go through this process with the FFL application and pay the fee and wait the time and then just be patient. You'll get it. It's just right. the where we're living in. And if you don't do that, the trouble that you run, let's say you have had a gun in your basement for 30 years and you sell it to your cousin who you're good friends with and you know that they won't do anything silly with it. But you don't want to go through this process. And mm-hmm. the problem is that if you don't go through the process, if at some point it comes back to you that you had the gun and you made the illegal sale, you could have some liability related right. to that. And you don't want that either. And so... as much as we know that the reason that we're probably going through this process is the folks that want to get rid of guns probably want to get a sense of how many guns are out there and where the transfers mm-hmm. are going, it's not any different than a lot of other things that we do in life, and it's just part of the game these days. Right. So,
and I think one thing, too, in listening to y'all's conversation recently with John, too, I think, you know, you sell that gun to a relative or someone you think you know, then all of a sudden – and we've all been there, most guys I know, at some point, you know, needed some money or needed to sell that gun or just said, you know what, I don't use that much. Then they sell it. They don't do it through a legal process. And now, you know, who that original right. registered owner is, nobody really knows. And then they sell it to somebody on the construction job. That guy, it gets stolen out of his truck. Then it gets used in a robbery. It could come back somewhere down the line to you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so that's, I mean, from the standpoint of really legally protecting yourself, it's much like titling a vehicle, mm-hmm. getting bills of sale, doing all the things that we need to do with other personal property that we have to make sure that we don't have any issues down the road relating to insurance coverage or liability or anything else.
Right,
so
right.
from that standpoint, when you're selling something, I mean, I think it does make sense to do it, especially with the way the statute is written now that it's against the law to do it any other way but through an FFL.
Yeah.
And
sure.
And if you do a lot of these transactions, it may be a situation where you try to get your own license to try to minimize, you know, what you have to pay and that mm-hmm. sort of thing as well. That process is a pretty cumbersome one, but depending upon your circumstance, it may be worth it for you to do it. And we have lots of sponsors that are
right. Absolutely.
That have licenses to do it. And so yep. it's not the fact that there aren't plenty of people out there that are willing mm-hmm. to help you.
And here's one thing, because I had a friend call me the other day on this. You know, it says that one of the first questions you check, are you the actual buyer?
Yes.
And he said, now, okay, I am buying it because I'm going to pay for it, but then I'm giving it to somebody else.
That's where you can't.
And I go, dude, you are asking for
right.
a problem.
That's exactly
again,
right.
you never know. They may not ever tell you they're going to sell it or whatever, or get stolen from them, and then all of a sudden that's registered to you. So
yep.
just don't do that.
Correct. Yep, that transaction comes back to you, and then it's sort of in the ether with what happens after it that, and then you've got to explain, and it's just not worth it. Just make sure you're not a straw person
right.
purchaser. If that we had the same question about, well, you know, a husband can buy a gun for their wife. Well, if the wife is going to own it, then let the wife mm-hmm. go through the process and the wife own it. There's
yep.
no reason that they can't own the gun, then let them own the gun.
Sure.
And another show about trusts and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah,
we can certainly get into that at some point. But there is a mechanism through a gun trust to potentially hold all of these guns in a family situation if you're concerned about the sort of transfer issues. And if people have questions about that, we can talk off air and figure those things out.
Right. Once again, Kevin's number is 303-806-8886. And, concealed carry, and I don't know. I think there was a lot of different counties handling this different through this COVID situation.
Yes.
But you can certainly still get your concealed carry permit. And I'm just going to tell you this right now, with the events of the last few days and last
weeks.
Couple of months, I would go get your permit as soon as you could if you don't have it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it really makes sense. And the permit's really not the hard thing. You can get that pretty quickly depending upon the county in which you reside. And remember, if you move houses and move to another county, you'll want to reapply, because it doesn't continue through the state. You've got to have it within the county that you reside in. That's where you want to make sure your permit is good for. And so if you move to another county, you've got to reapply in that new county. But the other thing that we always talk about is the fact that getting the permit is one thing, getting out and being comfortable with the gun that you carry and comfortable in situations that you're going to find yourself in out in the public when you have to use it. Make sure you practice those things and make sure that you understand, worst case scenario, when you're in a Walmart and there's a gunman, are you ready to take that gunman on, and do you have the particular skills necessary to do that so that you don't shoot other people that aren't the bad guy?
And, I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, you don't see many fully cops, fully in uniform at these stores. People are undercover, so
that's
they
exactly
got
right.
guns.
Yeah.
So you may walk around a corner, see somebody holding somebody at gunpoint. That could be the guard at the store, and now you think, oh, I'm going to shoot this guy to save that person. So
you've got to be really
careful. Man, there's so much
to think about. Exactly. And you know, that's what you learn in the classes, certainly, is make sure you understand what your target is, and you've got to be 100% certain before you pull that trigger, because that changes your life forever. Yeah, it really does. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't carry or that they shouldn't be willing to take on that risk. You just have to understand what the risk is and make sure that you're competent at what you do when you make that decision.
Right. And so, you know, get your permit, because, Kevin, I could get you from the legal side, but, I mean, you probably don't want to carry it full-time on you 24/7 unless you got a permit.
Yeah, and, you know, for example, we get calls, and I got a call actually this week relating to another defense, basically insurance, self-defense insurance, out of the state of Washington, that we're going to be one of their lead lawyers in Colorado.
Okay.
And so those sorts of opportunities, make sure that you feel comfortable when you carry, that you know what you're doing, and then also minimize your risk in case you do have to shoot, that you've got coverage for that, no matter whether it's through your homeowners or through some other, you know, there's lots of different products out there, and I'm not advocating for any one product or not, but take a look at all those different products and figure out which one works best for you if you're concerned about that. Because that is, you've got the criminal side, obviously relating to your liberty, but then when a shot is fired, you've also got the civil side relating to what happens, and the people, you know, immediately armchair quarterbacking what should have been done versus what was done.
Right.
And that's always, those of us in the industry that see these cases, there's always lots of experts that are willing to describe what should have or shouldn't have been done in situations where individuals shoot other individuals or police. There's always that debate about what's the appropriate thing to do. And, of course, you're making that decision in a split second.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk on the hunting side a little bit here and just, you know, carrying your gun, your rifle or shotgun in your truck or ATV, UTV. There's several different laws with that.
Yeah, there is. So in Colorado, you've got to make sure you understand what exactly you can do in regarding carrying the gun in your car. And a lot of times, it's also depending upon the county in which you're going through. So, you know, for example, Denver, and I'm not saying you're hunting in Denver, but right. but you can't open carry in Denver. You can in other counties. And so, you know, we talked about the concealed carry. That's one thing. But there's also a lot of counties in the state where you can open carry. And most of the time when you're hunting, you're open mm-hmm. carrying.
Sure.
And so those sorts of situations, you want to make sure that you understand what you can and can't do. You know, obviously in Colorado, you can have a gun in your car or your truck while you're hunting. For safety purposes, obviously, you don't want it loaded. And Colorado, you don't necessarily even have to have it cased. Mm-hmm. Other states, you do. I go back to Wisconsin and hunt quite a bit back there, bird hunt there. When you're on a roadway, you've got to have it in a case. And there can't be shells in it. So you want to make sure where you're hunting and what the regulations are. Every year, look at the CPW forms that come out and the new pamphlets, because they've always gotten the first two or three pages.
What's new?
Read those, because there's always something new, and it's always something that you got to consider. And with the changing of times that we're going through, mm-hmm. there's always things that are trying to restrict your movement of guns. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
There's just politically, that's what people are trying to do, and you've got to make sure you know what you're doing from within the state and also states to state. Because mm-hmm. if you're traveling with a gun from one place to another and you're in one state, you've got to follow their laws when you're there.
Right. You know, a lot of guys and gals, they may hunt together and have two or three people in a vehicle, and you think maybe your buddies may know what
right.
all of a sudden. So, you know, hey, it's nobody should ever get offended if you go, hey, everybody's got unloaded and stuff.
Right.
But you're driving the vehicle, you're kind of in charge, aren't you?
That's exactly right. You absolutely do. And safety's first. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You want to have a good time, but you got to be safe first. And there's lots of folks out there that, you know, say they've hunted a bunch, and I've been out with people that you start standing around with them and they start pointing guns and they're not really safe. And it's those sorts of individuals that you want to make sure, hey, and just have a conversation with them about, I'm not comfortable with the way that you're handling this gun. And you should be willing to do that at any time, because mm-hmm. it is, you know, it's a big deal, because who knows what happens with the weapon, or people, you can hear them turning their safeties on and off, you know, in situations where you're like, what's going on? You're just walking through the field. Those are always things that I'm concerned about, and the manner in which people are shooting at each other in mm-hmm. situations. People get excited, and I get that, but you've got to remember that to keep it safe, especially people and animals.
Right.
And since I run a dog a lot, I'm always concerned about that, making sure that people understand how that goes, and you just remind everybody, so it's top of mind.
Sure.
And even folks that you hunt with on a regular basis, it's never, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, okay, everybody good today? Everybody mm-hmm. understand what's going on and in a good space so that you have a good, safe hunt, and
absolutely.
Everybody can talk about it later.
So who is prohibited from carrying a gun in Colorado?
Yeah, so the possession of a weapon by a prior offender is what I normally will see relating to these cases. And they're first of all, anybody that's convicted of a felony. It could be people that aren't convicted of a felony, but maybe have probation relating to any sort of criminal activity, normally misdemeanors, or they're on probation at the time, can't possess a gun. If you have a misdemeanor that's considered a domestic violence crime, you're not able to carry a gun. You know, those are generally the places where we see people running into problems. The thing that you have to remember is you can still get a hunting license without being able to have the capacity to mm-hmm. carry a gun. And if you're out hunting and you have any sort of contact with CPW and they run your criminal history and it turns out that you are a felon or you meet one of these other criteria, that's a felony in itself. And so
right.
you have to consider that when you're doing these activities. And because CPW doesn't minimize that and doesn't run a criminal background check, they're going to take your money
sure.
to get the hunting license and never tell you that you don't have the ability to do those sorts of things. And it goes towards, I've got a case right now where my client went to Cabela's and got the kit for a black powder weapon or gun, didn't have to go through any sort of background check because it's parts and mm-hmm. it's not considered a gun for purposes of the feds. But he ended up having a situation where he had contact with police, and he had it in a backpack, and they decided that under the statute it was a gun, and so he got charged with a felony. I think we're going to be able to resolve that, but it's still he's going to end up with a conviction relating
sure.
to unlawful possession.
You know, our time's kind of short, but sure. We talked also about the red flag bill and that whole mental adjudication. So if you've ever been locked up for yeah. mental illness, or you've been termed that, adjudicated mentally, for mail, yep. you can't carry.
Correct.
Yeah.
You just can't, because that's going to come back up, especially when you're filling out the application for FFL as well. They ask you that specifically, and you have to remember, if you've had any of those sorts of things, you have to check yes relating to that.
Sure.
And not decline that aspect of the application. And you probably won't be able to buy a weapon at that point, buy a gun.
Right. And, Kevin, when we talk about that whole mental adjudication thing, I'm going to bring up the red flag bill. Man, so much going on. Right when it first came out, I remember seeing one case where a lady kind of even went after an officer with it, and I'm not sure remember what happened to that, but I haven't seen a lot about that red flag law, have you?
Yeah, so I haven't seen much in the press. I have a case right now that's a really interesting situation in Douglas County, in which I have a family member who their son was adjudicated with mental health issues. So they came in with the red flag order to get all of the guns out of their house because their son was living with them. And the authorities took the parents' guns as well as the son's guns. And so we're now fighting over whose was whose. And so we get into some of the
things we talked about
some
earlier.
Of the things we've talked about earlier, in the fact that they can't necessarily prove ownership of all of them, other than that they had them in their possession, and the son will say, well, those guns aren't mine, those are theirs. And they took all the ammunition for all of the guns. Now, ammunition is not included in the red flag at all. It does not allow the authorities to take ammunition. And so I think I've devised a way that we're going to be able to get the parents' guns back, and potentially the son's guns back to the parents to get it taken care of. And they agree for a period of time that they won't have the guns in the house. But it's okay. A struggle.
Wow.
So people really need to – what I want to say about this is, if you get one of these petitions for – they're basically a restraining order, mm-hmm. Restraining you from your guns. And if you're ever served with this sort of thing, you've got to take it seriously very quickly, because
right.
the application and the hearings that follow – are within a week or two of the temporary restraining order. And then you have the obligation to prove to the court that the temporary order shouldn't be made permanent, and permanent means for a year.
Sure.
And then you have to, again, reapply, but now you're reapplying to get your guns back. That just doesn't automatically expire. You have to actually have a hearing about what the status of things is, and the court continues to have jurisdiction. And so if you do nothing about it and say, I don't care, or maybe you have a criminal case that's pending and you're more concerned about that, you still need to be concerned about how that's going to implicate you throughout the rest of your life, potentially,
right.
because
sure.
you want to fight about that stuff. And so there hasn't been a lot. I know that the counties are using them. I mean, I know that there's definitely, in those situations, law enforcement is another mm-hmm. tool in their toolbox now, and it can happen to any of us at any time. And
right.
so, not to be hypercritical or to be sort of, oh my gosh, the authorities are coming after everyone's guns, I'm not saying that, but it certainly is one mm-hmm. of those things where they can use, if they have credible evidence, to show mental health issues are
right.
an issue.
And as few cases this may be, let's just run through real quick. If somebody knocks on your door, first of all, you probably should have, if you have any kind of feeling something's going to happen, they should call you, right?
Yes.
Before
yeah, they should call
authorities
me
come.
And get some advice about it. What a lot of people do is most of the time they think, number one, either they can talk their way through it with authorities, or number two, that they don't have any rights and they just have to do whatever the authorities want them to do. So, I mean, a police officer shows up at your door and is looking inside and says, can I come in? My advice certainly is going to be to you, never let a police officer. I mean, I have really good relationships with police. I won't let them in my house. They're not coming in my house
right.
unless they're providing me a search warrant
right.
and they're letting me read it before they come in. And so that I understand what's going on. I mean, they're just not. And I'm not going to voluntarily give them information. I'm not going to voluntarily allow them in. I've got a case right now that we're litigating over exactly that issue. A client was arrested. He knew he was going to jail. He had locked his pickup truck, was not allowing the officers into the pickup, but he needed his phone. and his phone was in his truck. And so the officers said, well, we'll go get your phone out of your truck. Just give us your keys and let us into the truck. And he said, okay, just get the phone and come back. Well, he didn't. They searched the vehicle, because then they said, oh, we've got consent to be in the vehicle. And now we're arguing over whether that consent was just, and there's case law on this, whether it was for a specific purpose or whether it was an actual consensual search. And what they found in the truck caused him to be charged with a felony. And so it's a really big issue in his case. And if he had just, and most of us don't remember our phone numbers and things. Sure. So he was being pragmatic about it and saying, I need my phone because I need to have somebody bond me out. But in that case, probably if he would have said no to allowing them in the truck, they probably wouldn't have had enough probable cause to go get a search warrant to search the vehicle. And so that case is going to turn on that little bit of just, and we all, the other thing, we have so much in our devices these days, and they're private. And the U.S. Supreme Court has said our phones are private. And so the authorities can't get in those phones without your password. And even if they have a search warrant, they can get the phone, but they're not able to get into it most of the time. And you don't have to provide a password. And so I want people to remember that you never know what the purpose is with law enforcement and what exactly they're investigating. And so without complete knowledge of what's going on, my advice is always to say and do as little as possible.
Sure. 2-3 minutes left here, but I want to touch on this because I don't know if you saw last week or 10 days ago, it came out Von Miller. The Broncos came out, and Parker police said they were investigating. So I'm not breaking any news here by saying that. So, but there were some issues maybe of possible domestic violence or domestic abuse. So you and I, we've kind of always talked about the term domestic violence.
Yes.
So if there's domestic abuse, is that different, or does that fall under the same umbrella? And the reason why I want to say this, because you want to stay away from that. Hey, we've had a stressful year, and we've talked to a lot of cops, and it has gone up some. But you know what? Hey, if you get into a situation, man, just get out of there right now, because it could cost you all your, for many other reasons, but one reason, it could cost you from ever owning a gun again.
That's true. So domestic abuse is still falls under the legal definition of domestic violence, and it includes assaults. Most of us think of people hitting each other or pushing each other or doing something assaultive, but it also includes harassment or words that are abusive. And so that all falls under domestic violence. And so domestic violence isn't a charge, it's a modifier of the charges that you get. So let's say if you get a harassment charge, but it's DV, the district attorney has to prove, number one, that you've harassed someone, and then secondarily, that in that harassment, there's also an underlying relationship that would fall into domestic relations, so that you have a romantic relationship, male-female, male-male, female-female, and it's all a go these days. If there's some sort of romantic relationship between the two people, and it seems that the harassment is related to that relationship, it's going to be domestic violence. And it can be historically. So if you and I were married and got divorced and we haven't seen each other for 15 years and I show up and I do something to you in the way of assaultive behavior, it's still a domestic violence because of a relationship 15 years ago. And so it's in the news, you may see domestic abuse, or anytime you see domestic something, most likely it's domestic violence. And that's where your right to possess a gun is going to be limited.
And maybe we'll hit that topic in a future show, because there's a lot of different things there, like you said. You know, I mean, you can stand against a door with your back to it and not let somebody out and be in trouble,
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
So, there's lots of things. You can break a door that's yours and your spouse's, and you could be charged with criminal mischief, domestic violence, if they can prove that the breaking of the door was trying to create a situation where the other person was in fear and the relationship was such. So, and it's your door. You should be able to do whatever you want with your door. But they had to make the argument, it's both of your doors, and so you're hurting their I mean, it's the Patrick Waugh incident 25 years ago.
Remember that?
Yes, that was that, and the way that he got out of that case is it was his door,
right?
Not the girlfriend or the wife's door. But otherwise, it would have been a problem for him.
Well, this is why we do this show, Legal Talk, and this way we can inform you about all different things of the law. If you've ever got questions, shoot me an email, scott@haystackhelp.com, and we'll make sure we get those legal questions to Kevin. We want to thank you for being with us today. Again, it's Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. Thank you for being with us.
call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law. 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where our reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
And I am your host, Dan Muir. Welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix, Arizona. Dr. Ben, how are you on this fine afternoon?
Oh, it is a beautiful day here in Colorado.
It's almost like 60 degrees out in January. I love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Okay, so Dr. Ben, before we get into, I got some other questions other than what we texted back and forth, but before we get into the topic of the day, tell people about the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix.
Well, let me just, I'm going to start with a couple stories here, Dan.
Okay.
I was thinking about you and thinking about that COVID-15 that we were talking about last week and then turned into the COVID-35 and the COVID-30 and then the COVID-35. So I've got two guys that I talked to this week. One, he's down in Canyon City. He used to be on the highway patrol, and he's down 20 pounds in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Talked to another guy today. He's got a 3,000-head dairy farm over by Greeley, and he's down 18 pounds in just over 2 weeks.
That's amazing.
The guy with the dairy farm, he said within 2 days his breathing was better from when we started. His joint pain is down considerably. His brain fog, he's sleeping better. He's got more energy. Just phenomenal changes and very, very quickly. And
okay, so Doc, I got to ask you, what'd you do? Did you hook up the Fat Vac 3000? Is that what you did? Plug that baby in and suck it all out?
So we just stick this thing down your nose, Dan, and you're actually going to be our next
Oh,
contestant.
Great.
So we just start sucking it out. So this is the great part with functional medicine is that we don't have this magic diet. We don't have this magic pill or the magic juju berry that's going to make you lose weight. We never do that. What we do is we figure out what's out of balance. And so the guy with the farm, he had some fatty liver. His blood sugar was off. He was pre-diabetic. A lot of these different things. And what we're able to do is just go, okay, you know what? Let's stabilize your blood sugar. Then we have to work on your liver. We have to work on your gut and do this and do that. And we'll figure these things out. And all of a sudden, the body goes, sweet, let's start getting rid of this and run up and down the stairs 10 times for me and then come back and I want to hear what you sound like.
Oh my gosh, you wouldn't hear me. I don't think I'd even make it. You'd have Charlie is who you'd have. Yeah, and the paramedics on their way.
And so your body, why on earth would it want to hold on to 35 extra pounds going up and down those stairs? Well, a couple reasons. The body's solution to pollution is dilution. So if you are toxic, if you're eating crap, if you're putting things into your body that are not good for you, the body's going to hold on to more fluid, hold on to more more basically puffiness that's going to dilute some of those toxins. And the other part, the body says, hey, you know what? I'm kind of like this bear. Maybe I'm going to go into hibernation because you're giving me a lot of calories, and I got these extra calories, and so let's save it for later. But guess what? We never go into starvation in, as humans anymore. It's not like, you know, you're going to sit you look at I read the Little House on the Prairie books to all my boys, and they would talk about that, those long winters. And I bet they'd go to bed at 4 o'clock, get up at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and they basically did hibernate, and they would have a little bit of food a couple times a day, and they'd pretty much shut down their bodies. And so they would kind of pull on these reserves. But in today's day and age, you could eat lobster 3 times a day if you wanted to. You can eat anything you want. Yeah. When was the last time you went to the grocery store and were like, man, too bad I couldn't get rice today or whatever, right?
That just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen at all.
No. You know, and even with the COVID rush on toilet paper, you know, you could still get stuff that you needed, maybe just not toilet paper, but you could eat whatever. You could still get lobster every day.
Oh, yeah, there are plenty of calories out there. If you wanted them, you could get them. No question about it.
Yeah, there's no lack of calories in this country. And so that's what we look at is, you know, the body is putting on weight. Why? Well, because of toxins or because of excess carbohydrates, sugars, grains, things like that. And then the body says, hey, I need to store this for later because there may be a time when I need it. But guess what? There's never a time that you truly need it because there's never a time that we go, I'm out in the wilderness for 40 days and just living off the land. That doesn't happen in today's day and age. So,
no, not here in America. That doesn't. Nope.
No. You know, unless actually people pay a lot of money for that, right? They go on these wilderness experiences and like out in the woods, but they're paying thousands of dollars for those programs. So what we've got to do in that functional medicine approach, Dan, is to take you by the hand and go, okay, which systems are out of balance? Well, this one, this one, this one, great. We're going to go through, help you fix those. And the body is amazing. If you break a bone in your leg, what is that bone going to do?
It's going to heal.
It's going to heal up. How does it know to go back into that straight position, to go back where it's supposed to be? How does it know that? Well, we've got this something called this innate intelligence inside of us. Our bodies know what to do. And that's why when you're a baby, your arm grows into that length that it's going to be. And one side isn't like, you know, 4 inches shorter than the other side or whatever it is. We've got this intelligence inside of us that goes, hey, we know what to do. But guess what we do, especially in this country, in America, guess what we do to inhibit that innate intelligence?
I don't know. What do we do?
Anything and everything possible to inhibit it. You know, with the food that we're putting in our mouths, with the toxins that we're spraying on our grass, that we're putting into our vegetables, from the heavy metals in the water. You know, there was a town over in Nebraska that just had a major poison in the last month of their water supply. All these different things. You know, we're constantly inundated with things that are throwing our body's ability to heal out of balance. And that's the major problem that we see in today's day and age. We were supposed to be healthy. We're designed to be healthy. You know, you look at an elk, and they're not out there going, you know what, I'm going to take the day off because I've got a migraine. I'm going to find that little cave, hide out from the sun, it's too bright, and take my Excedrin migraine. You know, that's not happening, right?
No, it's not.
Maybe it does, but...
But, you know...
And if it does,
the point you make is fantastic because I was doing some research on on a car that's new to me, that I was researching the fuel, and I've always put in the cheapest gas I could find, right, the 83 or whatever. Well, I found out that my engine works better at 87 or higher. So did I hesitate? Well, maybe a little bit. But did I hesitate to move to mid-grade? No, I want my car to run perfectly. I want to have that 250 horse when I hit the accelerator. So I changed it to the mid-grade fuel. So what, in a sense, what you're saying, Doc, is we're putting all this cheap fuel in a body that really needs, you know, premium.
Absolutely. And the saying I love is food is medicine. Most people have heard that.
Yeah.
But that's not the whole story. And we've talked about this before, but food is medicine. Sure. You know what? And you can eat good and do some things that way, and it's going to help your body. But there's no amount of food is medicine that's going to reverse food is poison. Food is bad medicine, because there's so many things that we're putting into our body that are that bad medicine. And there's no amount of eating Brussels sprouts. You like Brussels sprouts, Dan?
No.
Okay. We were out to eat on Sunday in Windsor, and a great little restaurant, and had these roasted Brussels sprouts, a little bit of bacon on them. Oh, it was so good. But there's no amount of Brussels sprouts or kale or spinach or, you know, your super green smoothie or whatever that's going to counterbalance you going through that drive-through at
all of them.
What are we driving through?
Every single one of them. I mean, it's just whichever one's the closest.
Yes, whichever one's across the street. You know, right. Why do we do that? Because we have taste buds, and those taste buds say, yes, that's good, and then it goes into our brain, and it stimulates our brain, and then we're like, wow, I've got these endorphins, and we're feeling good. So we're basically bribed into this food from our brain, and then it says, okay, I want it quick and easy, and I don't want to have to think about it, and just make it as convenient as possible. So, you know, we're basically feeding ourselves things that we know are poison, we know are toxic, and yet we keep doing it as a society. And that's why 70% of the U.S. population is overweight or obese. We've got, you know, at least 60% are pre-diabetic and diabetic. You know, it's crazy, the numbers out there. And then you wonder, and why does the U.S. have the worst outcome of COVID of anywhere in the world?
Well, exactly. Okay, so Doc, I got to change gears here just a little bit. Yeah. We've got a caller that wants to challenge you a little bit on the broken bones. You want to go ahead and take the call?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Wade, you're on. Welcome to Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben.
Oh, I appreciate it, and thank you guys. So you're saying that broken bones will heal straight. Well, I've broken 17 bones, and that is just not
true. Are you a bull rider?
I mean, what's that?
Are you a bull rider?
No, I was a downhill mountain bike racer.
Oh, that'll do it too.
Yeah, but I take issue with that. You're saying that your body knows to heal them straight. Well, that is not my experience. I've had 6 surgeries, and I've had plenty of bones set, you know, where they physically take them and put them straight and then put you in a cast. So I don't know where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, of course, if you break a bone and your leg is sticking out to the side, sure, you know, and you leave it that way, the body's not going to straighten that out. But if you line it up, the body will know how to heal that, know how to reset that bone and build it. And of course, there's always going to be extreme cases, but we could get 100 other people to call in and say, yep, that bone healed up good and that bone's straight and everything else from there. So of course, there's going to be extreme cases and when we're going downhill, things like that. But for the most part, the body, if you break a bone, I broke an elbow, I broke a wrist, I broke a my ankle, I broke the bone on there, and they're like, if it's a millimeter longer, you might need to pin that. I didn't pin it. I was off it for 6 months, and it found that other little piece, and it connected it back up. And that wasn't just luck that happened. That was the body using this tool to be able to heal itself up, because it knows how to regenerate and how to build. And so the point is that your body, if you give it the right things, is going to start healing itself. And if you take out the wrong things, it's going to start healing. We see people, I've got a patient, she's up in Carpenter, Wyoming, and she's got this really rare autoimmune condition, and we've been working together about 7 weeks. She was in a wheelchair every single day, probably 75% of the time when we started. I saw her yesterday, and she said for the last week, she has not been in the wheelchair at all. And that wasn't some magic thing that we gave her, but it was giving the body the chance to repair and recuperate. And that is why she's going to heal. And eventually she probably won't even have that autoimmune condition anymore.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, Wade, thank you for the call. We really appreciate it. And you're listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Shows of our Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix, Arizona. You can get a hold of Dr. Ben and the gang at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. So, Doc, there's a lot of things going on when we talk about blood sugar. And I, you know, every time you and I talk, it's like more and more is revealed to me that how blood sugar seems to affect everything. And I don't think people realize all the different avenues in which this sugar comes into your system and affects how you, you know, how you metabolize, how your body works. I mean, I don't think a lot of people equate carbohydrates with sugars. Am I way off on that, or am I kind of going in the right direction?
No, totally correct. We've got a book that I wrote last year called Blood Sugar Doesn't Lie. You can get it on Amazon. And in that book, I explain in detail a lot of the different systems that get out of balance when that blood sugar goes up too high, but also down too low. Most people think the term blood sugar, they hear that and they think diabetes and they think drinking sodas.
Exactly.
And desserts and all of those things. But it's not just that. And that's why I wrote the book, because we've taken thousands of patients and had them use a glucose monitor, the little unit that you poke your finger and check it and see what that blood sugar is. And we've used that with thousands and thousands of patients. And what we found is that there's no exact science to this. People say, have you heard the term glycemic index?
I have no idea what it is, but I have heard the term.
Okay. Glycemic index is how quickly something converts into sugar, into glucose. So if you eat a piece of Wonder Bread versus a piece of, you know, thick, hearty, you know, dark rye, whatever kind of bread, in theory, that Wonder Bread is going to convert into sugar faster. It's going to spike up the blood sugar more and then crash down, where that thicker, heartier, more fibrous grain is going to not go up as quickly. But it's not always that way. So
it's not?
Is supposed to be. No, it's not at all.
Because, man, Wonder Bread to me is like this miracle thing where you can roll it up and eat it and pull it full of butter.
So here's my Wonder Bread story. I was at a football camp up in South Dakota back in high school. And after one of the practices, they said, here's this $20 bill. Which one of you kids will eat a piece of Wonder Bread and have it totally chewed up and swallowed within 1 minute? And so we were all a little thirsty anyways, just from running around and practicing and everything. And so all these kids, like, I'll do it. And so one kid did it, and he put the whole thing in his mouth, and it just absorbed all the water it possibly could. And he just kind of sat there, and like, like 5 minutes later, he still hadn't done that. And then the next kid goes, oh, what if I just do a bunch of little pieces? So he like took little piece by piece, and by like halfway through, it was sitting in his mouth. And so, you know, that's my story. But
that's good.
So if you ever want to trick the kids, have them eat that piece of bread in a minute, they probably will not be able to. So, so banana is supposed to be high glycemic, and berries are supposed to be low. So maybe you've heard, oh, eat more berries,
right?
Because they're a better fruit to eat. But I have some people that every single fruit, including berries, makes their blood sugar go up. And I have some other people that even banana, they're okay with, and they can eat a whole banana. So it's way more individualized than we ever knew. And that's the fun part when we start using that blood sugar monitor. It's like gathering data. It's like you turn into this little private detective, and you start figuring out, oh, hey, I can eat that. I can eat some white potato, but sweet potato actually makes it go up. So a lot of people have heard sweet potato is supposed to be good for you.
Right.
Well, some people it is. You know, you've heard of quinoa, and that's supposed to be this miracle grain. But guess what? Almost every single person that we've worked with, if they try out quinoa, it makes their blood sugar go up. So it's way more individualized. Some things we just know.
Coca-Cola, hot fudge sundae. What else, Dan? You're the pro at this.
Oh, hot fudge sundae. You got your cherries jubilee. You've got, of course, you know, I'm sure there's a little bit of sugar and alcohol. Maybe just a little bit.
Yep.
You know,
a little bit there.
Yeah.
So we've got all these different things that we know make it go up. But what about a chai tea grande? We talked about this last week, the grande size. I still don't know what size that is. But a chai tea at Starbucks, 42 grams of sugar, 12-ounce can of Coca-Cola, only 39. So it actually has less than that chai tea at Starbucks. So all these different things have sugar. They have hidden sugars. They're carbohydrates. They're starches. Even black beans. Oh, the black beans have protein in them. Well, they also have 40 grams of carbs in one cup of black beans. And so almost everybody, it spikes up their blood sugar. So we find blood sugar imbalances on literally almost every single person that comes in. Either they're too high, they're too low, they bounce up and down, which is even worse than it just being high all the time. And this leads to many different conditions. We're talking fatty liver. Have you heard of fatty liver, Dan?
I have, and I've had people I know that have been diagnosed with like light cases of fatty liver. I'm really not sure what it is, though.
Yeah, so in the old days, fatty liver was from what we were just talking about, drinking alcohol. And so people that are drinking 12 beers a day, they're going to start getting what's called fatty liver, where the liver actually starts converting over into fatty tissue. If you're having blood work done and you're curious about this, the blood work marker, the liver marker, is what's called GGT. And GGT is that liver marker for fatty liver. Unfortunately, it's not run on routine panels, so most people don't know that it's a thing. So that's the traditional way that for years people, like Mickey Mantle, had to have a liver transplant because he was an alcoholic, and he had fatty liver to the point he had to have a liver transplant. Now we see it, I really see people because of alcohol having fatty liver, but it's because of these blood sugar swings. And we see fatty liver, probably a third of our patients come in, and they're either in or creeping into fatty liver. So it is because of these blood sugar swings. We store glucose in our liver, and then we kick it out of our liver when we need it, when that blood sugar crashes down. And I'll see people in their 20s, and they're already getting fatty liver because their blood sugar is going up and down, up and down,
okay,
up and down, over and over and over.
Okay, Doc. So we've got another caller. Mark in Denver has either a comment or a question on blood sugar. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, I heard that if you eat, like add fiber and or protein with the sugar, it lowers the glycemic, like the negative effects of spiking the blood sugar. Is that true?
Yeah, great question. And so in general, we're going to say that. So more fiber, and that was my example with the Wonder Bread versus like the really thick, heavy-duty bread. One of the main things that has is the fiber. And so fiber is going to, in theory, slow down that glycemic response, meaning it's not going to spike up as quickly. Protein and fat, so yes, protein, but also fat. And fat is going to do it a little bit different. So protein is going to keep it more from spiking up as much, where fat is going to keep it from crashing down. So if you or someone you know are getting hangry, you ever been hangry there?
Well, I have.
I'm sorry, say again.
Have you ever been hangry, Mark?
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah, so yeah, that blood sugar drop, you know, we get that hangry feeling. Fat, if you're not able to make it 3, 4, 5 hours without eating, or if your blood sugar is crashing and you're getting tired, spacey, hangry, add more fat to your meal. If you feel like you're spiking up too much, then you want to add more protein to that. And that's the thought of like, hey, if I'm going to have an apple, maybe have a scoop of almond butter with it, or you know, something where you have a little bit of fat, a little bit of protein with that, and it can buffer that.
Does that answer your question, Mark?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
wonderful. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate the call. And so, Doc, what, you know, people are always talking about, you know, high blood sugar, you know, diabetics and diabetes, stuff like that. It's high blood sugar. But what are some of the downfalls of low blood sugar? I think you mentioned being hangry is one of them.
Absolutely. So you've heard of people
being anemic before, low iron, right?
Right.
And what symptom are they having?
I don't know. What, you know? I'm not. No, I'm not.
They're tired.
Okay.
They're
yes. Fatigued. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So if somebody's anemic, they're tired, and they're like, "Man, I need more oxygen because that iron is helping to transport oxygen." So that anemia, the reason we need that oxygen transported because oxygen turns into energy. But get this: oxygen combines with glucose to make that energy. So if somebody's anemic all the time and low iron, they're going to be tired. But if somebody is low glucose sometimes, because we're not there all the time, but it's going to be a state that kind of hits and comes and goes, that's why we get that low energy state from there. It's basically like a short-term anemia for somebody. If you don't have that good glucose coming in, the brain needs fuel, which is oxygen and glucose as well. So if you don't have enough glucose coming into the brain, you're going to be spacey, brain fog, just a little bit out of it. If you're feeling like you're crashing in the afternoon, especially that 2, 3, 4 o'clock slump in there. And what do people go and grab?
Oh, a candy bar, donut. These things, yeah, I know, Doc. I know what to grab at that point.
Yeah, a Red
Coke,
Bull.
Yeah, you know, Coke. Yeah.
If you work in a cubicle setting, there's the little old lady that's got the bowl of Hershey's Kisses or whatever, and you're like, hey, let me grab a couple of those.
Yep.
So we're looking for this little pick-me-up because why? The brain needs that. The brain's like, crap, give me something that's going to stimulate me. So that's part of it. But the other part that we see with those lows, and this one, it's a little bit more technical, but the adrenal glands, the adrenals are our stress glands. They kick out cortisol. That's our basically adrenaline. And every time that blood sugar crashes down, the adrenals are stimulated and they tell, remember we said it's stored in the liver, that's why we get fatty liver. The adrenals tell the liver, kick out glucose. And so if somebody's swinging like this all day long, up and down, up and down, up and down, it's really crashing the adrenals. The adrenals, if they're really stressed out and the cortisol starts going down, people become fatigued all the time. It affects a lot of different things. One of the easy ways to know if you're getting adrenal problems, if you stand up quickly and get a little bit dizzy, that's an adrenal issue. If you have to wear sunglasses all the time because the too bright, that's an adrenal issue. So all of these different things can start happening. And especially if you or a loved one has autoimmune conditions, you've got to get that blood sugar stabilized because every time it dips or it goes up too high, you will get some more damage to that autoimmune system.
I just need you to define autoimmune system real quick.
Yeah, so autoimmune is where the body is attacking itself. So that's MS, that's lupus, that's rheumatoid arthritis, alopecia, type 1 diabetes, all of these different things. Dan, I've got a special for our listeners here. We've been talking about vitamin D a lot over the last few months here with COVID and optimizing your vitamin D. If you have not had your vitamin D done lately, we can do that. We're running a special for $40 to run that vitamin D. That includes the draw, everything that you need to know exactly what your vitamin D level. Vitamin D, if it's under 50, you are twice as likely to get COVID, as the research shows. Lots of different things in there. So we can be reached at 970-282-1173, and we'd love to hear from you. If you've got any questions, you could pop onto our Facebook page. Tons of videos on there. We love educating, and we'd love to hear from you guys as well.
Our doc, it sounds great, and that special sounds great. And once again, thank you for all this wonderful information, and have yourself a great week.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Doc. And once again, you've been listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and now Phoenix. And give them a call at 970-282-1173 and ask about that $40 vitamin D blood draw special. Once again, 970-282-1173. I've been your host, Dan Muir. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.